This is Squawk 1200. I'm Fareed Guillot along with Mike Morgan, and joining us in the studio from the National Transportation Safety Board, Amanda Taylor, who is a survival factors investigator. Welcome, Amanda.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It feels like we know each other already because we were just kind of chatting right before we get on air, but you are going to make a presentation this afternoon. You can give us the time and the location called Check Your Restraints.
I am, absolutely. So we have many different investigators within the NTSB, and I'm a specialist in occupant protection, crashworthiness, survival factors. And prior to joining the board, I spent 15 years at the FAA doing crash testing, crashed hundreds of just seats and restraints. I've also crashed Cessna 172s and a Fokker regional jet. So we've done just about everything, even did some military work as well. And so I have a real passion for understanding not just what your aircraft is capable of, but what your restraints are, where they are made, what their standards are too. Because especially in the EA, you know, the experimental world, you don't have to have an FAA restraint, but you really need to think about what that restraint is going to be being used for. So if you're doing acrobatics, that's different than basic flying. Ag flying is going to be a little bit different. And who's going to be flying with you? Do they understand how to operate the restraints? Because some of the restraints, like a four-point, is a little bit more complicated. So I get those questions a lot. What restraint should I put in my aircraft? What should I think about when installing it and buying it? Because you're not having to get a, you know, STC, you know, a full-on certificated restraint, that doesn't mean that you don't want anything not in there. You want something that's nice and strong. And so that's where I'm going to get into some of that. I'm going to get into, I've got some case studies to also talk about that. Child restraints, helmets for those that are flying operations that they might require a helmet, and things they need to be thinking about there. So a little bit of everything. So I titled it Check Your Restraints because the NTSB has a pamphlet that specifically talks about how you should evaluate your restraints and what you should look for. And so that's where I got the title from. So that's, it's not all restraints, but restraints are sexy.
How creative have you seen builders get in terms of, you know, where they put hitch points and anchors and things like that? I mean, I can imagine one might want to get creative just for comfort and kind of ameliorate the whole benefit of the restraint system.
Absolutely. Well, and finding a good location to put it into. Or how they attach it to. So that's one of the other things I'm going to talk about is how you actually do the attachment. So something that may feel nice and strong when you put it together on the ground may not survive an accident. So doing that good mechanical attachment is really important, and where you put it within the aircraft. Because if you get a restraint that's not optimally configured, it could allow you to move more with respect to the aircraft and let you move further than you would expect you would move. And then you have all kinds of things that are going to hit in front of it. So that's, yeah, I've seen some pretty crazy installations where I've seen duct tape.
Oh, please, no.
that's the worst case. You know, that's one of those, they also had a lawn chair in there. So, you know, you see a little everything.
Okay.
Do you get into nitty-gritty of don't anchor it to just a support brace, or try to find like a structural member, like a, you know, in the wing spar area, or like a side support in the fuselage?
I don't get quite into the weeds that far just because I didn't have that much time. So I can talk about restraints for hours, but they only gave me an hour with questions.
But in general,
answers.
I asked that question in general. Like, where are the best places to tie into the structure of the airplane?
Yeah, any of the, especially wing box, anything like that. You can also tie down to the floor. Sometimes you don't have overhead structure that you can actually get a hold of, get a good bite. It's something that's going to be mechanically, so you're putting it through a piece of metal, a piece of structure. You're not just attaching it to the outside. You're not just epoxying it in place. You have to actually, we call it mechanical attachment. Make sure that it's secure. Because like I said, something that feels strong here is not going to be strong when you start experiencing 4, 5, 6, 10 Gs.
Just for a quick primer, let's walk through how many points of restraint are there available out there that you typically see.
So your first one's going to be 2 points. Now, for most people, they understand that a 2-point is really not acceptable in the GA world, in any aviation world, and it's gone away even in automotive. You need to support your torso, because even if you don't strike something, being allowed to have your body flail forwards, even into space, is really a bad idea for your spine.
But there's a lot of airplanes out there that are, you're kind of stuck with that, right?
Some of them. There's a lot of ways that they can integrate some type of an upper torso restraint into that system. There's a lot of both STCs as well as non-STCs where they've gone back in, they've added what we call a 3-point. So that's going to be, you know, just having that diagonal cross strap. And that's one of the easier ones to install because that can go either up into the structure around you, it can go down to the seat, down to the floor. But stopping that upper torso, especially like for me, I'm a very short individual. So that means that when I'm flying a plane, I am pushed all the way forwards and my seat's as high as it'll go so that I can see over the top, which means I'm going to be a whole lot closer to anything that's going to be in front of me. So having some type of a torso restraint is important. And that's a 3-point. 4-point simply comes on both sides. So it allows you to take a deceleration from different angles. And then a 5th point is when you have that crotch strap added in.
And I fly large airliners, and usually on takeoff I am in the 5-point mm-hmm. everything, and I may, and in fact I don't even release the crotch strap throughout the flight. But the only thing that come off are like the shoulder harnesses, takeoff and landing for sure. I like to be really kind of strapped in there, and I think the 5-point is also like aerobatic is
yeah, absolutely.
Is definitely a 5-point because you don't want to be slipping around at all.
No, not, and it also, so the 5-point not only holds you in place for acrobatic type stuff, but that bottom strap, the strap that goes over your pelvis is, it's a beautiful piece of structure and it holds you in. And what we have sometimes problems with is people will misuse the restraints. They put it in the wrong place, they over tighten like a 4-point and they get it off of the pelvis. So that crotch strap keeps that lap belt over the pelvis. And
you want to keep it over the hip bones, especially you want to kind of touch any hip bones. Even those of you riding in the back of an airliner, make sure it's across your lap.
Yep.
That's the reason they say across your lap.
Yep, absolutely, because that structure can hold you in place even when you flail out into the world.
We're speaking with Amanda Taylor. She's a survival factors investigator for the NTSB, and she is passionate about restraining everybody.
Absolutely.
For safety. For safety.
Sure, yes, totally.
So what are some trends that you see, some exciting things that are, you know, moving forward in restraints or the way that we use them?
So we're seeing a lot of airbags starting to be approved for use. So that is the AmSafe has something called the SOARS kit. And I cannot remember what it stands for, but it's an entire acronym, S-O-A-R-S. And they have gotten it retrofitted. They got it certified through the FAA for don't quote me on this one, go mm-hmm. Google it, but it's either 451 or 541. I know that's those three numbers, I just can't remember the order, of old aircraft and variants. They cost about $2,500. And we found that even if the airbag deploys, so it's going to come up, it's a barrier bag, comes up in front of you. So now it's essentially like having a pillow between you and whatever's in front of you, your instrument panel, whatever you're going to hit. Like I said, I'm very close, so I'm going to hit a lot of stuff. But it also, even if for some reason, you know, it blows in front of you, but the accident kind of pushes you this direction, we found in research that it actually even lowered the loads in the lap belt. So you're still getting a benefit, even if it's not directly because of your face impacting it.
You may or may not have studied this as part of your training, but in the late 90s, a group was flying back from a Packer game in northern Wisconsin, and there was some engine trouble, and they went down in the forest, and the passenger grabbed his cheese head and put it in front of his face right before impact, and that saved him from getting a nice big instrument panel dent in his head.
No, I've not.
Is that going to be correlated into a future design?
Don't use your cheese head. Never heard of the cheese head.
It's real.
Oh,
this is not a tall cheese story or a tall wheel of cheese story. But it's, you know, have you been pushing retrofitting, especially for these Cherokees and some of these legacy aircraft that Mike brought up that you know only have a lot? I've been in them.
Yes, absolutely. If you can get a shoulder belt put in, especially with some of the popular models, there are plenty of options out there. They've got designs. It's really, the FAA has made it really easy to do that retrofit. You know, it's a field approval unless you have to really drill into too much stuff. I mean, you know, if you start modifying structure too much, then yeah, they have to actually take a look at it. But there's so many options out there. And so without a lap belt, a 95th percentile male, his head path would be about 50 inches. So his head is going to hit something within 50 inches from his seat back. with a shoulder belt, you've now dropped that to maybe about 30 inches or so. So you've now reduced that potential impact by 20 inches. That's a considerable amount of space when you're talking about all of the hard surfaces that are in front of you, even if you're not flying, even if you're in the back. One of the back seat occupants, you still got a seat right in front of you, and usually that seat is a nice piece of fabric over some really stiff steel tubes.
And usually like a fuel tester and some other stuff jammed in the pocket behind there.
Absolutely.
And who knows where that.
A couple of clipboards.
You brought up in your answer there, you brought up like the distance. What is a typical distance when people are just normally flying between, you know, it's usually the dashboard the above the instrument panel is probably one of the prime impact points. What is that distance typically?
I don't know. It depends on the occupant and the aircraft that they're flying.
But it can range anywhere from...
It's going to be where your hands are. So yeah, usually so, within hand reach.
So less than 2 feet probably.
Less than about, 2 feet.
Yeah, and which is way, you know, 50 inches, is you're going to be far forward if you don't have that torso restraint.
Well, and your hands are going to go even further. And mm-hmm. when it comes time, once the aircraft has come to a stop, you're going to want to be able to unbuckle your seat belts. But if your hands have gone even further into the instrument panel and you've got broken fingers, that's going to make it a whole lot harder to get out.
I noticed that a lot of the new GA aircraft have that car style seat belt buckle.
Yeah,
and that's button. You know, so it's just much easier to attach than trying to argue with the aircraft style seatbelt.
And that's, I actually recommend, so one of the things I'm going to talk about is the different styles. And one of that is using the push button because people are familiar with it. Because that is, like I said, if you've got people that aren't familiar with flying and they're nervous, something that they see on a daily basis, they're going to be more likely to use and use properly.
Amanda, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you having me.
Please find Amanda's forum later today. Check your restraints. Amanda Taylor from the NTSB, a survival factors investigator. You're listening to EAA Radio.